You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Can anyone explain why the modern day whales are so big?
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. A report has been released into a controversial clinical study conducted at National Women's Hospital between the 1960s and 1980s. The so-called unfortunate experiment saw patients with cervical issues observed without treatment in an attempt to prove cervical abnormalities were not a forerunner to cancer. This latest report that was published in the Australian and New Zealand Journal of Obstetrics and Gynaecology describes the medical experiences of the 82 women involved in the study. Laura Kvikstad spoke with the report co-author, Professor Ron Jones.
Well, the unfortunate experiment was an experiment conducted from 1965-1966 through and largely finished by the late 1970s. On a large group of women who had abnormal cervical smear tests. These women were referred to National Women's Hospital, and some of them, not all of them, entered what was called the unfortunate experiment, where instead of being treated to eliminate the precancer that had been detected in the pap smear, they were observed over a considerable period of time, and as time passed, more and more women developed cancer. In the early mid-1970s, two of my senior colleagues, Drs. McIndoe and Dr. McLean, and I published a paper in an international paper in obstetrics and gynecology, in which we explained that many women had developed cancer, and we hoped that this would stop the experiment. There was an internal inquiry in the hospital just before this, but it hadn't stopped the experiment. And following the publication of the paper, Sandra Coney and Phillida Bunkle, two women's health activists, published the story of the unfortunate experiment in Metro magazine, which was basically the story that we had told in the scientific paper, and which included a patient who was given the name of Ruth. This caused the government to establish a public inquiry led by Judge Sylvia Cartwright, and this found there had been an unethical experiment, that many women had been harmed, and led to the establishment of what we would describe as a modern ethics committee. Ethics committees had existed before this, but these were modern ethics committees, an organized national cervical screening program, a health and disability commissioner, and many other health benefits which led from this inquiry. I think that's the guts of it.
Perfect. And so how many women were affected by the unfortunate experiment?
Well, it's a very difficult, that's a good question, because in the paper that we wrote in 1984, we thought, in fairness to everybody in the hospital, we had to describe the outcome in, it was over 1,000 women who presented with what was called carcinoma in situ, which is the precursor of cancer. But when it came to, but not all of these women were managed in the experiment. Many of them were managed by other doctors in the hospital. But in, ultimately, we were interested in the group of women who had not received adequate treatment. In other words, they had had a biopsy diagnosis of the condition, and then they continued to have abnormal smears. Some of them had partial treatment, but if they continued to have abnormal smears, we put them into one group, and we compared with them with a group of women who, in our view, had had adequate treatment and had normal smears, And the group of women, I've got to get my facts here, my memory might not be very good, but I think there were about 140 women who had continuing abnormal smears following a diagnosis of carcinoma in situ. And this group were 25 times more likely to develop cancer than the group of women who had had adequate treatment and who had normal smears during follow-up.
So 25 times more likely.
Yeah, and if you want to put a percentage on it, at that time, 10 years of women who had 10 years of follow-up, 18% had developed cancer. Those who were followed for 20 years had 36% of cancer. And in a subsequent paper published in The Lancet, I think about 2009, the figures were placed around about 40%, so maybe as high as 50%.
And why do you think it was that originally your first publication highlighting this was ignored?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, if we go back, Professor Green himself had published, 8 or 10 papers arguing his case. I have to say he manipulated some of the data to his own advantage. And I mentioned that there had been an internal inquiry in the hospital, and rather than stopping the inquiry, those who were on the inquiry team, I think, were being loyal to an old teacher and professor. And their message was, you know, be good chaps and love one another. I think the medical profession was a different profession in those days to what it is today. We, in 1984, when we published this paper, were conscious that it wouldn't be received well by those in the hospital. It was complete silence. Not a soul spoke to us about it. And those were days when doctors didn't run to the media, as often happens today. And we, naive, those of us, the three medical authors of the paper, naively believed that the medical profession would sort this out. Everybody knew about it. There was no secret. But I think everybody just hoped that it would disappear. And that would be the end of it. But, of course, fortunately, Sandra Coney and Phil DeBunkle brought it to the public attention. And even that, I should say, in the first week or so following the publication of the Metro article, there was complete silence. I think the public was stunned. Everybody was stunned by the revelations. So there wasn't an absolutely immediate response even then to the publication of this pretty awful data.
They are nicking our shit. They totally are.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.